From WGCU, this is Sound Off with Sasha. Arizona's new immigration law created nationwide attention and debate. Will other states follow? Now, some supporters of the Arizona law also challenge automatic citizenship given to children born to parents without legal residency in the United States. Discussing immigration and the 14th Amendment is former counsel for the House Judicial Committee, attorney Mark Levine, who currently hosts Inside Scoop, a Washington, D.C. radio show. Good afternoon, this is Sasha. Arizona's new immigration law, signed into law by Governor Jen Brewer, created nationwide attention and debate. Several states indicated their interest in adopting the law, and Florida's Republican gubernatorial candidate, Rick Scott of Naples, announced adopting it as part of his campaign platform. It appears to be a low-risk decision, as according to the latest NBC, MSNBC, Telemundo poll, 61% of the public supports the Arizona bill. In addition, supporters of the Arizona law, such as Republican Senate candidate Rand Paul of Kentucky and 90 House Republicans, also want to stop automatic citizenship of babies born to parents not legally in the United States. But what exactly does the 14th Amendment say about babies born in the United States? Addressing the issue is U.S. immigration policy and U.S. immigration policy and the 14th Amendment is attorney Mark Levine, who served as legal counsel on the House Judiciary Committee. He currently hosts Radio Inside Scoop from Washington, D.C., and is also a TV commentator on MSNBC, Fox News, and CNBC. Mark Levine, welcome. Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you, Sasha, for having me.
Now, what were your thoughts on learning that the state of Arizona passed an immigration law?
Well, my first thoughts were on the first draft of the law, which explicitly permitted racial profiling. I was very concerned about that. It said that racial profiling was just fine as long as it wasn't the sole reason to stop people. And the other thing that the first draft did was it allowed arrest of anyone that had legal contact with a police officer. So if you're sitting in the same restaurant with a police officer, he can just go turn over you doing nothing wrong and ask for your papers. Now, the law has changed since then due to criticism from people like me and many others, and they have explicitly banned racial profiling and required it to be only on a legal stop. And then you have to rely on the goodness of the police, because one of the things they also said is that a legal stop can be even a violation of some administrative ruling, maybe if you don't recycle your garbage, or certainly if you jaywalk or do other things like that. So it all depends, at the end of the day, on the police force in Arizona. And 60% of Arizona lives in Maricopa County, which is the county where Phoenix, the capital, is and largest city. And the sheriff there, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, has made a practice of doing what Latino groups call stopping people for driving while Latino. He's famous for taking American citizens and putting them in jail for several hours until they prove that they are citizens. So it's not just a question of the law, it's a question of how the law is applied. And of course, at the end of the day, the entire thing is completely unconstitutional. It'll never go into effect anyway. So there's lots of thoughts I have on the Arizona law. The reason it's unconstitutional, by the way, has got nothing to do with racial profiling, but the fact that the Constitution requires that immigration law, naturalization law, all of that be uniform throughout the United States. Arizona can't have one law about whether or not you're legal, and California have another law. This is a federal policy, so okay. If you don't like the policy, it's the government, it's the federal government that's in charge.
This is great, because I was going to ask you if immigration is under federal or state jurisdiction, and can different states pass different laws a la carte?
They really can't. I mean, the one thing the state can do, I guess, is pass the same law as the federal law, but that's meaningless. That's simply redundant. To the extent the state goes beyond federal law, it can't do that. And the state goes beneath federal law, it can't do that. So really, the entire purpose of the Arizona law was political. Now, it did achieve a strong political purpose. It's going to try to help Governor Jan Brewer in her tight primary campaign and John McCain and his tight primary campaign, it certainly made the news media focus on it and even made President Obama focus on it. So it had some real political aspects. It also is causing a lot of Latinos, even citizens, who don't know the ins and outs of the Constitution and the law, and I don't think most Americans do. This is no slight on Latinos, but they're going to be afraid, and they're going to be afraid particularly of the police, and that's going to make enforcing crime a lot more difficult in Arizona. That's why the Arizona Association of Police Officers came out so strongly against the law. Whether or not it has any effect doesn't matter, because if people are afraid of going to the police, both citizens and illegal immigrants, we're not going to be able to catch some of the crimes, the drug dealing and narco trafficking that really is dangerous in Arizona and is killing people. Police want to be able to find out who's doing it. But if an illegal immigrant witnessed the crime, they're not going to come forward. And I fear that even a legal citizen who witnesses a crime will be afraid to come forward. So, again, that's real political effects, even if it has no legal effect.
Now, what does it say about our immigration policy or lack of it that some states are reaching out desperately to do something?
You know, it's very interesting why this is happening right now. I believe it's all politics. I really think it's Governor Jan Brewer in a tight race and John McCain in a tight race. Illegal immigration is way down. In Arizona and across the country, and I don't know how they measure these. I admit that it's very hard to measure, but the best measurements we have show that just 2 or 3 years ago we had some 16 million illegal immigrants in the United States, and now it's down to 10 million. It's down almost 40%, and the reason is quite clear. It's the economy. When less jobs are being offered to illegal immigrants, they go home. And it's the same economy that's causing people to be angry, because when U.S. citizens lose jobs, they get angry, they look for someone to blame, and rather than blame the Wall Street recession that caused all this, they're going to look for poor people and blame the illegal immigrants. So ironically, the same economic recession that is causing illegal immigration to be at its lowest point in decades is also causing people to be angry enough to focus on something that they didn't focus very much on a few years back.
Now, what do you think is missing from the willingness or the readiness of various past and present administrations to produce a workable policy? Everybody rolls their eyes when it comes to working on an immigration policy.
Well, people need to remember our recent past. In 2006, under George Bush, who did support comprehensive immigration reform, it's one of the few things that he did that many liberals applauded. He worked with Ted Kennedy on that. They passed a bill in the Senate in 2006 for comprehensive immigration reform, which included everything from a fine for the illegals to make them right by the law, to a path to citizenship, to making them learn English, to border security. It was comprehensive immigration reform, the kind that, many groups would like to see on the left and the right. 23 Republicans in the Senate voted for that bill. 23.
That's
including
big.
Including John McCain, who was a big proponent of it and, in fact, was well known as someone who supported comprehensive immigration reform. How many of those Republicans today support the exact same bill they voted on 4 years ago? The answer is zero. Not a single one, not even John McCain. They have all flip-flopped, and the reason they flip-flopped can't be because of policy. It's the exact same bill.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is only one difference, and that is that President Obama is president rather than President Bush, and they don't want to put a win in his column. And because only the federal government can deal constitutionally with immigration and not the states, it's entirely because of this Republican flip-flop that we're not getting anything done.
All right. You can join the conversation on immigration and the new Arizona law by calling 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255, or email sasha@wgcu.org. You can share your thoughts about what you thought of the new Arizona law. Now, does the U.S. economy need a continuous influx of immigrants, even with the rate of unemployment?
I actually think we do. You can argue that at the moment, meaning right now in 2010, immigration isn't that important. And I'd probably agree with you. At a time of bad recession, this isn't a time for massive increases in immigration. As I said, even the illegals seem to understand that they've gone home. But in general, over the course of many decades, absolutely we need immigrants, partly to fund our Social Security, to fund our Medicare. Most of the immigrants that come to America pay taxes and give much more to the economy than they take from it. There's this misconception that illegal immigrants can get welfare. They cannot. Mm-hmm. They're American-born citizens can, and I know we're going to talk about that, Sasha, but the illegals themselves cannot get welfare. The only thing they can get is if they're dying in the streets, they can get emergency aid, their kids can go to school, but that's it. So this idea that they're getting welfare checks, it's just simply false. Most of them, in fact, the illegals, will make up a Social Security number and end up paying thousands, tens of thousands of dollars into the system, and they'll never get a penny back because it's a fake number. So they end up actually paying taxes to our system and often support it more with less return than American citizens do.
Now, did you expect the Arizona law to have such a wide acceptance? This business about the poll, 61% of Americans support the Arizona law.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen polls ranging from as low as 51% to as high as 70-something percent. It does seem to be a majority of Americans. And I think some of it is the way the poll is worded. I don't think most Americans realize that it's unconstitutional. I think if you told them that, the poll numbers would go down. But I also think that, sadly, in America, there is a tendency by a majority population to say, well, if something affects a minority, we don't really care. The same poll that shows 50 to 70% support for the Arizona bill shows more than 70% of Americans believe that legal Latino citizens will be harassed under the bill. So what that means is while a solid majority support the Arizona bill, an even greater majority of Americans think legal citizens will be harassed, but they don't think they'll be harassed. They're not Latino. They won't be stopped by the police. What do they care? And, of course, more than 70% of Latinos are against the bill. I'm afraid I see this as something very common in American history. Jim Crow laws, let's never forget, were supported by a majority of residents of Alabama, Mississippi, because the majority were white and the majority didn't care that the blacks didn't have freedoms. You know, the majority of citizens tend to support denying marriage to gay people because the majority of Americans are not gay. Sadly, when you have a majority rule, they often don't care about minority rights, and that's exactly why we have a constitution, to protect a minority from the tyranny of the majority.
All right. Again, our telephone number is 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. And we are going to go to the phones, taking a call from Marcus in Naples. Marcus, go ahead, please.
Hi, thanks. I'm a moderate liberal. I have a lot of liberal views up to a point, but even I have to say that the immigration thing is out of control. It is unfair for our country to be, you know, sucked bone dry by so many people coming to the country, not just Mexicans, anybody that is here illegal, taking a job, and then most of the money that they make, and I know because I work with some of the people, send all the money back to their country. One fellow I used to work with had a couple of houses in his original country, you know, and he's going to end up retiring in his country. So basically they bled us, sent the money home, became millionaires in their homes, and then went and retired over there. And they're going to get a Social Security check for the rest of their life when they retire from this country. It's just unfair.
Let me ask you about this, or let me ask Mark. Will he get a Social Security check?
Yeah, I'm going to break down. I want to talk about each thing Marcus said, but let's start with the last thing he said.
Okay.
Marcus, Mark, how are they going to get a Social Security check if they don't have a legal Social Security number? They're not.
I think.
Don't they get benefits?
No. See, these are the misconceptions people have. The only way you can get benefits under Social Security is if you have a Social Security number. The only people who have a Social Security number are people with green cards, that's legal immigrants, and citizens.
Right.
So they pay into the Social Security system, they get nothing back.
I see, and I do remember President Obama saying that during his during the election cycle. I do remember that, but my main point was,
well, let me
deal
with your other
point, job angle.
Well,
yeah.
Let me deal with your other points, because
okay.
You say that they take the money and they send it back to Mexico, and I'm sure
yes.
That's true in some cases. Did they not work hard at their jobs? Did they not earn the money? Do you think that they were slacking off, or do you think they were hard workers? Because
no,
accounts are very hard workers.
Okay. They're actually harder worker than Americans
are. Yeah, I think that's often true. So in other words, they earn their wages. So really your only concern is that they're sending them back to Mexico, and if they have a path to citizenship, paying fines, paying taxes, learning English, getting right with the law and so forth, then maybe they'll stay in America rather than sending it back to Mexico. But at the end of the day, you can't, say where someone's money goes. I mean, people can send money wherever they want. There are plenty of legal American citizens and legal immigrants that also send money to family members in other countries. We have troops abroad that are spending their earnings in Germany or Japan or South Korea, wherever they're stationed. I mean, that to me seems to be the only legitimate criticism you're making, and I have to say I don't think it's a very strong one.
Okay, Mark, I want to thank Marcus for his call, and we have to take a couple of other calls. Thanks
Please
for calling.
Do. Yes.
Okay, next we are going to Frank in Fort Myers. Frank, go ahead, please.
Yes, good morning. How are you? Great
Fine,
show.
Thanks.
Hi, Frank.
Question I have is real simple. I watched the CBS show when this first came out, and they showed an illegal immigrant packing her car to move to Colorado out of Arizona. And, of course, she owned the car she was packing up. How can you own a car if you don't have papers? And the question I also have...
I don't believe there are any papers that are required to...
You don't have to be a citizen to buy a car.
To own a car. Yeah, cars are registered. It's true, cars are registered. I don't believe you have to be a citizen or even a legal immigrant to own a car.
I disagree with you. I've got people that I do work with in low-income and homeless on the street, and if they don't have an ID, they can't get anything. And ID is required in the state of Florida to get anything. And I also know there are a few people who are on welfare who do not have papers.
Well, how do they get the welfare check?
Real simple. You falsify it.
Okay,
what do they do?
Do they
country?
Falsify a Social Security number?
You live in a world of everything's wonderful and blue. It's not true.
No,
it goes on all the time.
In my view, all fraud should be prosecuted. I have no problem with that. I have no problem if people fake benefits and they get it. But there's this widespread notion, and I think it's false, that the vast majority of illegal immigrants are here and they're not working and they're living off welfare. I think it's exactly the opposite.
You're
I think
right.
most of them work very
They
hard.
Are working, and they're taking jobs away because they are doing low-level jobs
That's
that
true.
People and low-income people would normally do, and they're taking their jobs away.
Do you think that Americans would do these jobs if illegal immigrants didn't?
Oh, yeah. McDonald's in a heartbeat.
I'm not so convinced.
The illegals are working at McDonald's. Yeah, okay.
I'm not convinced that California and Arizona and Texas economy would be as strong as it is without the help of the illegal immigrants. I'm not convinced.
Okay,
about that.
Frank, I have heard this statement. I think it's about 30 years ago from a very successful California businessman who said the California economy would stop if it weren't for Mexicans coming over to work.
Well,
and
I have to say that Florida economy could prosper if we did not have so many illegal
Okay, Frank, I appreciate your call. We have to take some other calls. Thanks for calling. And we are going to Mike in Naples. Mike, go ahead, please. Hello, Mike.
Yes, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Real quick, just with the whole prosper thing in Florida, half of our crews I work with are legal immigrants, and of course I'm not going to mention, but I guarantee you that maybe McDonald's, that might happen, but I'll tell you what, there's nobody that's going to go out there and do some of the work these guys do, the tomatoes and stuff like that. And my biggest thing is how the prosecution can come down on these people, and the conglomerate corporations have built up upon this cheap labor, and they've made their money from it, and now all of a sudden you think that if you're just going to get rid of them, that these people are going to take these places and work it. And I'll tell you what, I'm not. And if you knew what they make an hour, no, I would love to see an American citizen come to me and tell me that they're going to work for the amount of money that they pay these guys. And they're not. And so the prices are going to go up. Everything's going to go up because we're going to be paying more.
All right, Mike, thank you for your call. And we are going to not respond to it directly because some other people are waiting with similar questions. So thanks for calling. Thank you. We are going to go to Jim on Pine Island, but first we are going to take a call from Kevin, who is calling from a cell phone on Alligator Alley. Kevin, go ahead, please.
Hi. I'd like to have the guest elaborate a little bit on why the Arizona law is unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment. Are there any cases interpreting the 14th Amendment that would support that position? The reason I ask is because the Arizona law doesn't change the uniformity of immigration law in Arizona. What it does is empower Arizona law enforcement to enforce the uniform laws across the United States. So I'd like some elaboration on the 14th Amendment issue, please.
All right. We shall do that. Thank you for calling and listen to the response on your radio. Thank you.
First of all, Mark,
hold it for a split second.
Okay, sure.
Because we have someone waiting for a very long time, and I want to have him phrase his question, and we can go back to the unconstitutionality. This is Jim from Pine Island. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I love your show, and man, I could talk about this topic all day, but I just have a few things to say. I'm 52 years old. I paid taxes all my life, and I have an 11-year-old in school, and he needed his tonsils out, and his friend, I won't mention her name, was Spanish, had his tonsils out, and it costed him nothing, and I paid $3,200. I lost my job directly from Spanish. I was a home builder, and I kept getting underbid because I didn't hire Spanish employees and didn't know how to speak Spanish. So I actually counted. There's a newspaper printed here called Locked Up, and out of the 450 people that were locked up, 72% were Hispanics. And I just think that we're so understaffed because I really did try and call immigration to, I knew where 8 illegals were working, and I called and they kept jerking me around, and I ended up calling Homeland Security. That phone call costed me $7.30 a minute, which I got a bill for.
He said,
you need to call your legislative person. So his name was something like Jesus Alvarez, and I got mad. Everywhere I called 3 different phone numbers to get rid of these illegal immigrants, and every phone number was, do they need help? Do they need housing? Do they need money? Do they need Social Security numbers? Well, I have Spanish friends. I'm not a racist. They're hardworking people, but let's get them to have to do it legally, and let's hire some people for this job because it's so understaffed. There's literally 5 people in Tampa taking care of the whole coast. They say they know where I live is such a bad area with immigrants, and there's nothing that can be done because they're so understaffed. But
all right,
if we want to make
Jim,
some jobs, thanks
Jim,
for listening to me venting.
I appreciate you expressing your thoughts, and I'm glad you called. I don't know
Thank you.
Thank you. Now,
I have answers to all of this.
Yeah. Mark, let's go back to the constitutionality and the 14th Amendment with the time we have left. So go ahead.
Well, and then I do want to briefly respond, if I can, to Frank, Mike, and Jim. First of all, it's not the 14th Amendment. I don't want to be misconstrued. It's Article 1, Section 8. It's the one that requires a uniform system of naturalization. And if the guy wants a case, he should look up Hines v. Davidowitz. It's a Supreme Court case from the 1940s that made very, very clear immigration is a federal standard. Anytime Congress acts in this field, it preempts all state legislation. You got to go to federal authorities. I do want to respond quickly to Frank, Mike, and Jim with, I think, something that can bring us all together here. As long as we pay illegal immigrants the minimum wage, give them basic working standards, it does 2 things. First of all, it helps American workers because they're not being undercut. I heard a lot of complaints about being undercut. The second thing, obviously, is it helps be fair to the people who are here. The third thing is if we sanction employers and punish them for hiring illegal immigrants, the caller that just called should find out who employed these illegal immigrants and try to get sanctions on them. Then I think the demand goes down. We have less illegal immigrants coming, and I think that's a win-win for everybody.
All right. Now, let's go back to the 14th Amendment and
this
call for ending the automatic citizenship for babies
born
to...
Right. That is in the 14th Amendment, yes, unlike the other part, which was in Article 1, Section 8. Yes.
All right. So what does Rand Paul have a point there?
Well, as you know, Sasha, the Section 1 of the 14th Amendment says all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States. So the Supreme Court has held for more than 100 years that that means that if you're born in the United States, you are a citizen of the United States, and the only way to change that would be a constitutional amendment. I realize there's some discussion of what subject to the jurisdiction thereof means,
but that's a biggie, isn't it?
Well, I understand the argument. It's actually not a bad one. I've seen
Repeat it again. Subject to the jurisdiction.
What? Subject to the jurisdiction thereof. So it's all people who are born here subject to the jurisdiction thereof. I actually think what that means, as a lawyer, if you're subject to a state's jurisdiction, that really means simply you're under those state's laws. For example, if you're an ambassador and you run a red light, you can't be stopped because you're not subject to these nations' laws. You're an ambassador. That's why we can't get parking tickets to those UN diplomats. But the vast majority of people here, legal and illegal, are subject to the jurisdiction of the state they're in. And so I happen to think the 14th Amendment does require even illegal children born here to be citizens. Now, if people don't like that, they can modify the Constitution. But my view has been shared from the Supreme Court for more than 100 years, so it's not exactly an obscure view. I understand the other side. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying that I think I got the better view on this. The Supreme Court agrees with me.
All right. Well, yes. Now, the question was that you are saying that if anybody wanted to change it, it would have to be an amendment.
A constitutional amendment, yes.
I see. Now, because I don't know if you are aware of this, but in England, for instance, there is a new law that children born in the United Kingdom have to have at least one of the two parents be either citizens or like resident aliens.
And we could amend our constitution to say that, but of course England doesn't have a written constitution. They just need a majority in parliament. For us, it would require a two-thirds vote in both houses of Congress and three-quarters of the states. It's very hard to amend the constitution.
Now, this brings up a very peculiar, I don't know if it's a problem or a situation. Are you familiar with those birthing tours from foreign countries where the price for the trip includes, for a pregnant woman, includes airfare, accommodation, hospital, and a guaranteed citizenship for the child with a social security number?
I've heard about those, and I have to tell you, I have no problem with having a law, and this, by the way, could be a law, wouldn't require a constitutional amendment, that says that immigration officials, custom officials, can deny entry to the United States if it appears to them that someone is coming here solely for the purpose of creating an American citizen. You're not actually in the United States. If you arrive in a New York port, you're not officially in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof until you get past customs, even if you're actually, you know, in the state of New York.
Oh, wait a minute. That was a very interesting angle. So say it again.
So you could pass, without a constitutional amendment, you could easily pass an immigration law that says that customs officials at the borders and ports of entry can turn away any woman, pregnant woman, who it appears to them, reasonably, is here solely for the purpose of having a child become a United States
citizen. Yeah, but that's such a subjective decision again.
It is.
But why don't they deal with it in the hospital, you know, that you don't get registered as a citizen?
That's different because then you're here. You see, you have to do at the port of entry. Once you get into the United States, you are subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, and the 14th Amendment applies. You'd have to stop them at the borders or on the ports of entry or on the airplanes or at customs, something like that.
It's really fascinating because basically that's not a large number because it costs like $44,000 these days. It went up for $22,000 a couple of years ago. Now it costs $44,000.
If they could pay that much, they probably should become citizens anyway.
Well, but they don't. They really just want to get an entry. Mark Levine, that's all the time we have today. Time flies when we have you on.
Thank you, Sasha. I always enjoy it.
Thank you for sharing your time and your comments with us. Now, this was Attorney Mark Levine, who served on the House Judiciary Committee and is currently hosting Inside Scoop, a radio show from Washington, D.C., in addition to being a commentator on MSNBC and Fox News. Thank you, Mark.